This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and diminished our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make a variety of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more. All made right here in the USA, from growing the cotton and adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
Who's going to play Kenny in his biopic?
Oof. I leave that to you.
Jason Statham.
Oh, no, come on.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
OTB's The Hurling Pod.
With Bord Gáis Energy.
Proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.
It is The Hurling Pod. The All-Ireland Champions Limerick heading into the break now in the Munster Hurling Championship. Two wins from two. Aaron Galan with 1-8 today as they registered a 15-point win against Tipperary. Unbeaten in their last six against the Premier and very much on course now for another Munster final. The gloss was taken off a little bit for John Kiely's side by Peter Casey picking up an injury. Looked like a nasty one on his ankle with 17 minutes to go. Clare, meanwhile, they battled back from 7 points down to defeat Cork in a thriller on Lee's side. Their campaign is now very much back on track. Conor Whelan with a late equaliser, rescuing a draw for Galway against injury hit Kilkenny. In Leinster, a game the Cats will probably feel they should have sealed and seen out in the last few minutes. The story of the weekend, and the one we're going to kick off with, is Antrim coming back from 7 points down as well to spring a shock, a 2-point win for them against Wexford at Corrigan Park on Saturday, and Fergal Whiteley's goal on the hour helping Dublin to overcome Carlow by 5 points. Delighted to say, we've got Paul Murphy. How are you, Paul?
How's it going, Will? How are you, Skell?
So far, so good. How are you, Liz?
James Gale, before we start, and Antrim, I think, deserve top billing this week on the podcast after what happened on Saturday afternoon. Why did you not get to make an NFL pick for a team?
How I feel? I'm disgusted. I think it's because maybe the market in terms of the Patriots and their fan base is obviously massive in America, but I think it's very, very big in terms of Germany. So I'm trying to be logical here, Will. I'm not trying to get my emotion in the way here. Because what I want to say is they should have came over to Ireland. We're next stop, especially Galway. But no, they went to flip in Germany. So I'm putting it out there. I'm manifesting this now next year. I'll be in the middle of Pier Stadium, the wind blowing in my hair.
I don't think they need to go to Pier Stadium. I think they need to do it from the cow shed. Just bring you out a few cows, Patriot jerseys on you. And you just lean into the Capitagal accent, just go, and the Patriots of the 78.
It's big. And they're even go on.
Deontay Brooks, linebacker.
Not him, yeah. Why did you do this, lad?
And a calf just falls out of a cow in the background. Done.
Come here, can we? Look, don't get me wrong, I enjoy discussion on farming more than most, right?
Yes,
but
you
I'm
do.
I'm sick to my shit now of calf scour this week, okay? So I just, can we just skip on the farming?
Skip on, we won't go near it.
So hold on, has the scour gone throughout the entire shed now at this stage, or where are you at?
It's like fucking children in a creche, Will. Once one gets a sneeze, the whole lot of them just, it's like a domino effect. The whole flipping lot of them. I thought I had curbed at one. I said I wanted to skip the farming talk.
Yeah, well, was Podge patient zero, or was Podge one that picked it up along the way?
Podge was patient zero. Right. Podge brought the whole scour into the place.
Podge was cool in 2019.
Yeah, let's have some fun here and let's just spread it to everybody. And let's keep James active morning, noon, night with this calf score. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I tried to set up the camera there one day to capture, going around catching them without getting killed by the cow. Look, it just angles away. I couldn't cover enough angles. They were just going all sides with no help, sure.
I think it's still possible. I mean, there's other people in the house. You can maybe get them to hold the phone and hope for the best here.
Yeah, well, that's ambitious thinking now, to be honest, right? Because if I got one of my sisters come down, I'd only start eating them for not helping. Right. If they saw me going round and round after these calves, So I think they're probably afraid. It's hard to explain, but I think everyone here who was the son or daughter of a farmer and went through it growing up, know what it's like to get absolutely roasted by a parent when you're not doing something that they think you should be on the same telepathic wavelength of thought, right? So I'm the same way. I've inherited my own father's way that if she doesn't make a move or he, I'm going to absolutely hate them as if they should know. So what happens is that they stay out of the shed or stay out of the farm. Why are we still talking about farming? We had a great day, hurling.
It's all ahead for your daughters. Before we do dip into the hurling, though, when I saw it, the reason I thought of you was I could totally understand Paulie Clifford. I think off the top of my head, it was round 14. They went to Kerry for that one. And he had the, like, presumably somebody over at the actual draft has already locked it in so that Paulie Clifford can't make a mistake and read out the wrong name off the cue card when he's in Kerry. But anyway,
he was
on the clock for the Steelers. I can understand that because he's been up in Croke Park. He got photos taken with the Steelers. It's all part of their kind of charm offensive ahead of eventually the Steelers are going to play at Croke Park. Totally understand. The Jets trying to get into the Irish market as well. What I didn't expect out of the Jets, Greg O'Shea. And that's the moment when I saw Greg O'Shea, I went, you know what? I think Scale's a bigger NFL fan than Greg O'Shea.
Yeah, I am. There's no choice about it. Yeah. I was an NFL fan before all the lads. Them lads are what I call our new NFL fans. I'm going back to when I was 1998, man. Let's just talk about it. Will, please, I'm already in a stressful mood today because the kids have my head wrecked. So please, can we just move on to something positive, please?
Fine. I'm sure you wouldn't particularly, or maybe you would have taken a lot of enjoyment for picking for the Jets anyway, but the Jets weren't going to trust a Patriots fan to be making their pick as well. But that could have been a trip to the Guinness storehouse. This could have been the perfect way of bringing everything together. Scale at the storehouse with a pint, making the pick. But anyway, maybe next year.
Definitely next year, you mean?
Definitely next year. Okay.
Yeah. How does Robert Kraft know?
Right. This is the Hurling Pod featuring a little bit of NFL, a little bit of farming from time to time with Bord Gáis Energy, proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship. We want to kick things off. And look, there's obviously loads to talk about in Munster, particularly Cork showing a bit of spirit when even Joe Canning was saying that they're a bit fragile, a little bit brittle, only lost one game in his entire career, underage or senior. We saw Anthony Nash's reaction to that on Off the Ball on Friday as well. We can maybe come back to that. We saw a response from Cork, but Clare ultimately came out on top in a thriller by a couple of points. And we will talk about Limerick again hitting a gear and just leaving Tipperary behind them. But I think Antrim is the right story to start off with because this caught everyone a little bit unawares, I think, coming into the weekend. Even to the point that I saw an article in the Irish News wondering what was the point of Antrim going for a week to Portugal after taking a heavy defeat against Kilkenny. But Wexford came up to Corrigan Park, got themselves into a strong position. Lee Chin scored both the goals. They were flying. 7 points up. And then Antrim showed a bit of something about them. So we saw the goals that went in from Sean Elliott and from Niall McKenna. Then I'd say a lot of people probably, even if they weren't watching on GA Go, because the great part was, whoever the Antrim PRO is, they were clipping some of the best scores out on Twitter as well. So when you saw it was in the melting pot, I think a lot of people went to Antrim GA. Certainly, I was at the Offaly against Westmeath game, and the way I was following the end of it was, I went to Antrim GA's Twitter to see what was happening. I saw this wonderful sideline cut, which was taken going into stoppage time by Jared Walsh, which he clips over, and then Conal Cunning sticks over a point, which gives them a two-point win. Mm-hmm. Paul Murphy, they're a different beast when you play them at Corrigan Park, but to go from the performance that we saw against Kilkenny last week to turning Wexford over is one hell of a turnaround.
Huge turnaround, yeah. And I know we can look back to, we can point to, you know, victories against Clare a few years ago, victories against Wexford as well, maybe 2 years ago, 3 years ago. But like you said, it's the turnaround here. Like last week in the one pod, we were talking about Antrim taking a big beating from Kilkenny in Nolan Park. And in the same breath, we were also talking about, you know, down the way in this round robin, Wexford meeting Kilkenny, potentially causing Kilkenny problems. And maybe that's where there's going to be a bit of an upset coming from, you know, that conversation. So for the triangle to come back around and you have Antrim then just beating Wexford and being down by 7 points. And, you know, there was lots of great individual bits of skill that you really have to compliment Antrim for. Like, absolutely, Jared Welch's point, I mean, I've seen it across several parts. But, you know, he got a long-range score in the first half as well, which is outstanding. When I look at other things as well, then, like, look at Sean Elliott's goal. I was actually comparing it to Sean Hayes at Tipperary against Limerick. Sean Hayes had an opportunity for a goal and he took it on the hurl and it kind of gave Nicky Quaid that extra second to come out and close him down, where Sean Elliott got the ball straight into the hand, gave him the extra second past Mark Fanning and he hung it up. So everything that, in fairness to Antrim, that they were doing was excellent. And when they went 7 points down, you know, there's a huge opportunity there for them to drop the heads and go, maybe today isn't going to be our day and we march on. But no, completely rallied. And I will give you credit as well with that, Will. The Antrim PRO does a great job, because this isn't the first time. Several times throughout the years when games have been nip and tuck, Antrim are great for churning out the stuff on social media if you're watching another game, or maybe if the game isn't being covered. But yeah, like that, I was flicking on to have a look to see what the story was with it. And it was just, I mean, some of the scores, some of the bits of play, but the atmosphere up there looked electric as well, which is brilliant. And even I think just the outpouring as well, the goodwill towards Antrim after the game was brilliant. I mean, it was, I suppose it was a strange one. You see Neil McManus watching on as a commentator with RTE. It seems to be a bit of a funny one, like, you know, because especially with him stepping away, you were probably thinking, where Antrim going to find, you know, he was a big motivational factor for that team and he was a big man to lift them. That was a big lift for the whole team there. You know, Conal Cunning, outstanding as well. Like, they had so many different players that performed. Keelan Malloy, you know, they were excellent. Like, you know, so it's great, and they should enjoy it. They should enjoy the next few days. That's a big victory, and it's a big victory in the championship as well. They've had other ones in the league, but this is a big championship victory, which is well earned.
Yeah, I mean, look, here's the thing, Scal. Paul has just read off a few players that came back in to the panel for a championship, and we knew they were going to get stronger because these players have been playing really well at club level, and we've seen them in the All-Ireland Club Championship in recent times, and it brought strength and experience back into the Antrim panel. But the reality is that it was a very short time to try and turn around from last weekend to get it right against Wexford this week.
I agree. And like we spoke last week about the difficulty that that's what the short time scale has in terms of getting up for a big game, ultimately getting hammered, which is the truth, and then trying to get kind of park that, trying to find the positives out of it, trying to fix some of the wrongs, which is, you know, in that game there was an awful lot of wrongs, and then try and, you know, get the train back on the tracks heading for another top level county coming home. But like watching the game, sometimes you look at these games where you say there's a perceived gulf in class. You say, oh, this result was kind of stolen, or there was a lucky bounce, or, you know, there was an awful lot of luck on the behalf of the winners in terms of, you know, the second tier team. But this was a battle throughout, like, it really was. And like, it wasn't, if you look at the two teams, and if you knew nothing about the sport, you'd say these two teams are very evenly matched. They're two top tier teams, and they offer up a really good contest. And, you know, I was looking at the Antrim situation. I think it was 45 minutes. They were 7 points down after Rory O'Connor got his point. And I was thinking, geez, this is going to be a huge test now, whether they can stem the flow, get it back within kind of maybe a single score, two score game, or is it going to run away? Will they show kind of fragility from the weekend previous? And they did the absolute obvious. I took just a couple of, I went back and watched it again this morning just to kind of get a feel for the defence. So after the Antrim turnover differential was +9. So in the last 20 minutes, you know, from 45 quarter to 70 or 73, right, they turned over Wexford nine times more than Wexford did to them. So that just shows a huge work ethic, you know, and like a plan too. Like, you know, there was multiple phases whereby Wexford, obviously they were getting this huge change over Leach Chin. He was causing ferocious damage. Antrim were trying to drop off a bit and try to cover the ball into him, but they put ferocious pressure on the Wexford backs in midfield, so the supply began to kind of, you know, stop a bit. And then you mix that in with what was causing the Wexford backs trouble. Direct run, like McNaughton, direct running for both goals. Like, you cannot teach that. It's the same thing with Cork today against Clare. In the manner in which, let's say, Shane Barrett took on John Connell. When you have that direct running and your backs going back towards your own goal, it's a very, very hard place to be, you know, as the goalkeeper and defender in the full back line. And Antrim went at it with energy. And they saw the game out. And yes, people who look at the sideline was great, but there was more scores in that game that Antrim produced. You know, that was nice work. Like, it wasn't just lucky hit and hope stuff. It was pattern play that they built and it came off. Like, and one of the, sometimes when you get a rub of the green and you start, you get a bit of momentum, it's like a snowball effect. It gets better and better. And you could feel that the crowd get involved. And once that happens in a place like Corrigan Park, which is notoriously difficult, as is proven in the past, you know, it's a very, very tricky position to be in as a Wexford player yesterday. So that's a tough defeat for Wexford to take, but like Antrim, full value for the victory. And the question is now, you know, can they move on, you know, take another step, let's say? And because you can be sure as hell they were motivated after last week's performance, that wasn't the true reflection of their team or the work that they've done over the last, you know, three seasons under Gleeson. So now can they just keep going, build it, take the confidence and move on, which signs on from yesterday they can.
Yeah, so the way that Leinster has decided if there are teams tied at the end, unlike, say, Munster and unlike probably all the other competitions in the GAA at the moment, except for a couple of club championships, it's a mini table head-to-head if teams finish level at the end. So this also gives Antrim a nice little advantage because they've beaten Wexford by a couple of points. And in all likelihood, Kilkenny and Galway aren't going to be the teams who are level. So even if you take heavy defeats in those two, it's really about what you do against your rivals to try and get that third spot. So this has blown the Leinster Championship, both the relegation side and also the qualification wide open after what's happened at the weekend, because Carlo, who we'll talk about in a moment, have been competitive in their first two games, and in this case Dublin got the results. So Dublin are in a very good position now, having drawn and won on their first two games against Wexford and against Carlo. They'll play Antrim, and I suppose, Murph, that Antrim against Dublin game now becomes really key to see who's going to qualify.
It does, and when you can cast your mind back only a few weeks when Dublin visited Corrigan Park last, and there was the goal that, you know, Antrim will be disappointed that went in the first place and would have wondered should we went on and won that game. They will really look at this going, this could be a substantial year for us if we go and take on this Dublin team and actually beat them. And they won't have any fear of it now, because like they've shown, Wexford will feel disappointed. And the sentiment around the Wexford-Dublin game was Wexford left it behind them against Dublin, that, you know, they left Dublin in for two goals in the last few minutes. Antrim will look at that going, will we bet Wexford fair and square? We can now go and face Dublin. And technically, like, I mean, and again, I know it's only, this is massaging the stats now, but they can say, well, we could technically be a 6-point better team than Dublin if we go and perform. Like, you know, if we're capable of beating Wexford, and Wexford were 6 points up in the last few minutes, why can't we go and get a bit of a lead against Dublin and have that belief? Because it seems to be with this Antrim team that they have the hurling, there's no doubt about that. It's the case of maybe the belief, and maybe that kind of, they need to build up that little bit of a brain stock of memories that, well, we have markers here to show that we're capable of beating teams. And beating Wexford is one of those, to go, well, actually, do you know what? We can turn over teams and not be a shock, let's say, do it fully on our merits, do it fully on our own terms. So let's go and beat Dublin. And I think that's a very dangerous thing for Dublin as well, because you know, Dublin, good result against Wexford, led Carlow into it, and I know we'll get into that, but half-time, 4 points down against Carlow, Fergal Whiteley's goal, again, Carlow will be disappointed with that. I don't think Dublin will approach that game knowing that the goal in Antrim really helped them. I don't think they'll approach that in such an aggressive manner as Antrim will. So Antrim coming against Dublin, I think that could be a really good game. And I think, you know, it has to be said, it's a huge opportunity for Antrim now.
Yeah, so Antrim go to Parnell Park to play Dublin on the 11th of May. They've got Galway at home, which they probably won't expect something from realistically. And then crucially, on the 26th of May, in the last round, Antrim bring Carlow to Corrigan Park, where if they're within a shout of qualifying, that's a really, really important game as well. And look, the thing about Antrim as well, Skell, I know maybe you talked about it a bit, you were very impressed with the way that their half-forward line played particularly, and the hassle that they caused for Wexford's backs, especially in the second half. But you know, this Antrim team, when it comes to results when they're required, I think of last year where Westmeath had just beaten Wexford and everyone reckoned that was enough to keep Westmeath up, and Antrim went and out-hurled them in the last day and sent Westmeath down last season.
Yeah, and like, that's the question I have really, I was going to actually throw one towards you, Murph, was like, you know how Antrim, like, they've become associated with providing really good performances in Corrigan Park, and that's because it's their home venue, it's their support, and they feel, I can't think of the word, you know, but nearly more at ease or comfortable, or is it motivated, the right word, in their home patch, right? And I'm thinking, if Antrim could only bring that with them, you know, to other places, because Parnell is a notoriously difficult place to go also. But like, my question is, when you take Antrim out of that environment where they've everyone behind them and put them into an environment where everyone is, you know, theoretically against them, let's say, will they produce the same performance? Because they're quite an emotive team as well.
Yeah.
So I was going to say to you, now I'll get back to the Antrim thing in a second, but just this is in my head. When you were going really well with Kilkenny, right? Yeah, and even the short span we were going, like, you could go to anywhere when you're going really well because, you know, we're going to beat them. We're just too good, you know what I mean? But then when you kind of, there's parity, did you ever go to places where, like, shit, like, we need to, you know? So my question is, how did you, I'm asking this really bad, Mark, please forgive me.
I know what you're saying. You're saying that, like, Antrim mentally are very strong in Corrigan Park, but how do Antrim travel on the road and
bring that with them?
Like that.
Exactly, because he would have gone to Thurles, Parky, wherever it is, like, you know, over time, and came away with victories. Like, so that could have shown some kind of, you would call it resolve or whatever, or confidence, whatever it is, arrogance even to a degree, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
How do Antrim bring that forward is the question I'm trying to ask.
See, I think that the win against Wexford, not to be understated, I think it's a big kind of shattering of a glass ceiling for Antrim, because I'll put it this way, right? I can't delve into the psyche of an Antrim hurler, club hurler, intercounty hurler. I don't know. But I've played against Antrim teams before, and extremely proud teams. And like I've played up in Casement Park. I suppose few players of my generation can say that they played up in Casement Park. But when we played Antrim up there, you know, they're tough. What? It was your debut?
I remember Championship debut up there, yeah.
It's fair play. But like when we played them up there, it was a tough place, and they'd be right up in your face. But maybe you could be questioned that do they bring that on the road with them, that aggression, that they've no reason why they shouldn't bring it on the road. But I think what Antrim needed for their psyche, I'll put it this way, about 10 years ago, I was asked to go into Kieran's College. There was a team down from Antrim. They were under 16s, and they were down, and they're doing a weekend. And they asked, one of the questions that was asked was like, do ye as Kilkenny, do ye respect us as Antrim hurlers? Like the young lads wanted to know this. Like my response to them was that, look, if I'm growing up in Kilkenny, everything was put in front of me to become a hurler. There was no hurdles put in front of me. I was supported. But for you as an Antrim hurler, there is social hurdles put up in front of you. Like, I mean, I held my hands up and said, I don't know what you've experienced, but I know your parents would have experienced it. I know you went through a lot to be standing here playing hurling. So you should bring that with you and say that, like, we have every entitlement to be standing here as much as Kilkenny, as much as Tipperary. And if anything, more entitlement because you fought that much harder. Culturally, you fought that much harder to be there. And I think there was that, maybe that's what the Antrim team need to realise, that you can hurl that well in Corrigan Park, you can hurl that well in Croke Park, you can hurl that well in Thurles, you can do it anywhere. So I think this result against Wexford, I think a lot of those Antrim lads, and rightfully so, should be going away going, absolutely no reason we don't go down to Dublin and beat Dublin. There should be no reason because the markers are there. And like, Scale, you talk about measurables the whole time in terms of within games or whatever. This is, if any of those lads needed any proof to say we can go and beat lads, and we can genuinely do it, whether they would say it out loud or believe it behind closed doors quietly, there's your result. There you are. Wexford are capable of beating, let's say, come away from Limerick. Wexford are capable of beating teams. Like, you know, Drew with Clare, they could turn over Kilkenny just as easy now in the next few rounds. They're disappointed to draw with Dublin. Like, what other results do you need to go your way? So I think for Antrim here, they now need to get that out of their head, if it was ever in their head, that going on the road is different Corrigan Park. It's the exact same. They just need to bring that with them.
Yeah, because you made a great point there, like with the social hurdles, right? And sometimes I'm looking at Antrim and I'm saying, right, above all teams nationally, they've obviously, you know, incurred the most difficulty in socially, right? And they might get a feel of tribalism up in Corrigan Park previously in Casement Park, and they dislike to nearly defend it better, defend the sport and defend its meaning, right? And then when you come out of that place, it's like they drop down 20%, 30%. So I in my head, I'm looking at Jester's results and I'm going, Jesus, like, move all that shit aside now for the moment, right? Look at the hurling quality. Look what you put in front of you.
Yeah.
Absolutely go to Parnell Park into what would be a boisterous, you know, kind of a crowd and beat them. Do you know what I mean? Now, it mightn't happen, but they certainly have the abilities, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Do you know what I always find the most symbolic thing, having been up there a couple of times, when Antrim would play matches up on the coast in Ballycastle, always felt like you could see Scotland pretty much in the horizon. And you brought it right up to the very heartland of hurling in Antrim. The most difficult trip that any team could make up there. And I remember going up there for a few league games, and I'm pretty sure early on the McDonagh Offaly played two games away there, and just almost impossible to try and win there. Because you felt like you were genuinely going into a stronghold of a county as opposed to a, you know, nice, comfortable county ground where it feels like it's almost equal billing. You felt like you were actually going into somewhere that was going to be very, very difficult to get to a result. And they should 100% use that as part of their strength when they're at home as well. I just flipping this ever so slightly, Scale, because something that Murph said actually stuck in my mind there, which was Wexford have got so much potential to get results against other teams. Why do Wexford keep getting bad results against teams who they should be beating on paper? Because we think of Westmeath draw a couple of years ago, Westmeath defeat. We already mentioned them going up to Antrim before, losing to Antrim yesterday. Why does this keep happening?
Well, good question, because I go back to, let's say, 2018, 2019, that kind of term as well. And that was kind of when I look at they were in their pomp, you know. All the clientele they had were at a very good level, and the age profile was very good. And yes, they've introduced a couple of players now this year, but the team in which they get bet seems to be always the same. You know, the manner in which they get beaten, like, so it always seems to result in turning to a long ball game. There seems to be no real plan to utilise the assets they have in hand, right? So you look at Lee Chin, right, and he had a fabulous performance, but Are you getting enough out of the Rory Connors, you know, and the Conor McDonalds? Albeit they're back from injury, I get that, you know. Like, and I have to say, every time, no, it's a no, you know, and it's always reverts back to a route one kind of hope system as opposed to a plan system. Now, when they go well, they're very impressive, don't get me wrong. And they can be very impressive down at Wexford Park, but it just seems like they have a plan A, right? And the plan A yesterday was direct to chin, and it can come off. But then ultimately, teams will cop that, and back units will cop that, and that goes against you. And that same team in which they got beaten yesterday was the team in which they got beaten by Tipperary in semi-final 19. Now, I've quoted that match an awful lot because there was a numerical advantage on their behalf. But that's what they did. They just went plan A, bang, 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 down on top of, if you remember those days, the Rona Maher. And the kind of same team repeated itself yesterday. So it's like when they're going fierce well, you know, they're like March hares, they're hard to stop, right? But when they get embroiled into a battle, they revert back to a type of a game that can be easily nullified by opposition, in my view.
Which used to leave Conor McDonald very isolated once upon a time, where he was expected to win his own ball, often against two defenders.
Correct. And like, sometimes he did. But like, if you poked in like 8 balls, Conor McDonald, he might get two for you, because it's a very, very difficult thing to try and hold up that, to try and, you know, retain that ball 6 out of 8, because the type of ball, if you're going like most teams now, if you look at the way Gillan operates, you look at the way, you know, when he's inside, Owen Cody operates, Conor Whelan, there's always an avenue to try to run to space to utilise the ball, you know, so you have a chance to attack or a chance to an out ball. With Wexford, you get it at times with Keane Byrne and at times with Chin yesterday in the second half. You got a lovely one out in the 15 corner, then it all stopped and it all went to direct route one again. So it's like sometimes they don't utilise their strengths and they go route one, which can sometimes be centred on the personnel that you have at your disposal. So like even Jack O'Connor, big unit, you know, same with McDonald's, go back previously with Guiney, different lads like that, that's what you had at your disposal. But I just think they haven't kind of, I suppose, evolved. Is that the right phrase to use over the last number of years, whereby they have to kind of change their system somewhat? And I just saw similar patterns yesterday, not taking anything away from Antrim, mind you, to what I saw, you know, 5 years ago. And you'd be hoping that as the group changes, you know, the game plan changes or the kind of the manner in which you play. But it just hasn't. It just hasn't. So ultimately, it's the same thing. Like yesterday, think back to the last 5 minutes, lads. Sharp out from Fanning, gets the ball back and just roots it. You know what I mean? That's what we saw years ago. So, and ultimately, teams have copped that. Not going to work.
Yeah, I do feel for Fodered O'Toole on Twitter, who straight away responded when I said we're going to talk about Antrim, and he's stuck up the Simpsons meme, which says, "Won't someone please think of the Wexford fans?" So it's one of those. It seemed to me, Murph, that everything was well set up coming into Championship. We talked about the players who were getting game time. Young Byrne has obviously played very well. He got 4 points in play yesterday at Corrigan Park as well. And the feeling was that there were, you know, there was depth there now with some of the key players coming back in. In the end, it's like Rory O'Connor sends over that wonderful point from the sideline, but other than that, doesn't get any scores. Limo McGovern had a chance for a goal. He got kind of blocked and hooked very late on, but aside from that, he contributes a point. Like, when you look at it, out of the 220, Lee Chin hits 211. There's obviously a bit of an issue there trying to distribute. If you want to add to it that, say, Byrne gets the four, there's only 3 other scorers across the team.
Yeah, it's true. And if you look at Lee Chin's goal as well, it wasn't a case that he was part of a, well, let's say aside from the penalty, he wasn't part of a well-worked piece of play. It was a ball landed down and Lee Chin's a monster, you know, catches the ball, takes on a few lads and hangs it up. So I suppose there he can't even appoint to, like, let's say, like McNaughton running through and popping it off to Elliot, like where it's a case of run through the middle, draw them in towards you and pop it off where there's, you know, there's a bit of link-up play there. Like I looked at a few of the Antrim scores as well, and there was great running off the shoulder. We often talk about the running off the shoulder in hurling and like timing your run and all that stuff. And just saw so many examples of it where it was enthusiastic. It was gutsy, the running. They were there to support. They timed it really well, which really meant that Wexford couldn't defend against it at times because when the runs are timed so well, a well-timed run means you can't really defend against it anyway because a player is breaking so hard that you can't defend. And at the other side then, as Skehill was alluding to, there was times there where Wexford just drifted away from it. They didn't root one ball, didn't provide any other threat, which maybe just allowed Antrim to keep growing into the game. As Antrim realised, okay, we're getting a bit of traction here. And, you know, make note of it there, Antrim hit 5 points in a row in the second half. After it went down by 7 points, there's a period there where they hit 5 points in a row. They realised that we have Wexford on the racks here. They realised that their game was working, and their game involved a lot of lads getting really stuck in, running hard. When we didn't have the ball, you had to work hard, and they did it. You know, they did it. And I think that's something that, you know, if you're a Wexford player going away from yesterday, you'd have to go, well, you know what, did we do that enough? You know, we've been great, you know, let's say in the league, you can point to lots of things in the league where they were undefeated, maybe into the second last game or the last game they're undefeated in, few really good performances. But then you point to the Offaly game where they gave Offaly the initiative. So there's lots of things there where you go, well, okay, maybe in games where you're looking at the opposition and you give the opposition the due respect, you really perform well. But then, you know, maybe do you disrespect teams a little bit? You know, maybe did you disrespect Offaly a small bit? And like, that's something I would impart to dressing rooms, and still to this day with the club, you go, let's not disrespect this team, because you will, that'll be the door open for them to come in. And I think that's, there was maybe a little bit here of complacency in the second half, up by 7 points. You know, you have your backs up, you think you're going to win, team comes back at you, you're not expecting it, and you're finding it hard to kill it. So there's a few things there for the Wexford lads to unpack. It's a tough one, and it'll be a tough one for the supporters, because particularly off the back of last year, there was a lot of indicators here to be going, and like, look, the season's not over, but there's a lot of indicators here to go, this could be a really good season. And I suppose results like yesterday are just, will be disappointing for the supporters and the team as well.
Yeah, so look, it's far from over for them. Wexford play Galway this coming weekend on Saturday. We'll talk about that in more detail on the bonus pod. Then they've got their little kind of mini break. They're back out on the 19th when they go to Carlow. They've got two southeast derbies effectively to finish it off. So they're away to Carlow and they're away to Kilkenny. And we don't need to remind people of Wexford's very favourable recent results against Kilkenny. So there's not unthinkable that Wexford couldn't pick up points in that last game. But it's a big ask from here, Skell. They're going to have to beat probably two of those last three teams if they're going to qualify.
I think there's no probably about it. Will it? They're definitely going to beat them. They have to take down one of the big dogs, if you like. At least, you know,
one big dog might not be enough. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, after all I've said about Wexford a few moments ago, there is still the distinct possibility that they can go and turn over Galway. Very, very, very possible.
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
It's like just what we spoke about Antrim's mindspace or mindset when they were in Corrigan Park. Something similar can be applied to Wexford. You know, now I know what they drew against Dublin and the Dublin beat them last year. That's a different story, right? Different games. But sometimes it's nearly a horse for a course of Wexford. When Kilkenny come to town and Galway come to town, the mindset is just a bit different, you know, because there's the underdog mentality sometimes. And sometimes if you put Wexford into a, you know, a favourites mentality like they were yesterday against Dublin last week, sometimes it mightn't suit them. But the other way, in contrast, that what's coming next week potentially, and this is Galway, it's both are third game in 13 days, so it's going to be physically testing. And Galway by no means today were impressive. They weren't. Some parts they were, but for large parts they weren't. So there is a very distinct possibility, even though I have confidence in Galway that can come away with a victory, that Wexford could do one here. You know, they could do one. So it's not beyond the realm of reality either.
Right, let's get round to it then. Galway 223, Kilkenny 29 points. Before we started, Skell, you admitted Galway got a few favourable calls in the last 5 minutes.
You put me into it there, now, didn't you? You put me into it there. Did I say that?
I'm not betraying the confidence of the chat we had before the call. It's not like you said something egregious. I've just said, by your own admission, Galway got a few calls.
I thought the performance overall from the referee was positive. I did think in the last couple of minutes that we got definitely one call, say, from Ireland, last one that was probably favourable, to be honest. You know, I thought that was favourable. The time clock management perspective, I said, no, he's played sufficient amount of time. But I don't think it was the... I don't think... Yes, it afforded just an opportunity, but it had a very similar feel to last year's game in Nolan Park, whereby we felt like we got out of jail with a kind of a semi-result. Like, Kilkenny should have won the game. That's just the reality of it all. And to say that with the knowledge that they've missing some of their stars, that's the truth. They're missing their star keeper and they're definitely their two best forwards. So it's like, Jesus, like when you put it into that kind of context, you're saying...
Whoa, hold on there now a second. Have you just rated both Adrian Mullin and Owen Cody as better than TJ?
Definitely, yeah. 100%. In current form. I'm not saying ever, historically. Yeah, yeah. I'm saying what they produce right now versus what TJ produces right now. 100%, definitely. But don't skew me like that now. Don't skew me. I need to get back on course here.
Go back to Murph on it in a second, but go on, continue.
Yeah, hold on a second. TJ historically is one of the best ever, right? But currently, what the two boys are better. Sorry now. So moving on, okay. I don't even know what I was really saying. Will you put me off track there now?
You're about to say something about the fact that Kilkenny were missing three of their most important players.
Yes,
and it would have been very impressive if they'd won, I suppose.
Yeah, it would have been very impressive, and you know they would have been value for it too. Like, to be honest, because I do put value on the number of scores, individual scores you make. I know Galway kept a clean sheet, but I do put value on the number of scores that Kilkenny got, and they clapped us out by plus six, let's say. So it's like, you know, there was times in the game where I was looking at it and I was saying, geez, we're chasing shadows, specifically here in the second half. And there was periods there where I'm always saying that they're like, we have to stop rots every now and then if a team gets run you. Kilkenny got runless, you know, in the first half and in the second half and went out to like the 5 and 6 point respective leads. So that's a hard pill to swallow. And yes, we got a fortuitous goal, I have to say. And in fairness to the keeper, like, he made two really good saves. We could have got another one. And our own goal wasn't heavily threatened. Derek made a reasonably good kind of routine save. But I just thought in the middle section, say, from our midfield to our half forward line, for our half back line of midfield, kind of where we were overran an awful lot of the time. Too many times I was looking at Kilkenny scores and saying, where is the space coming from? Like, how is there no contact being initiated on top of these lads? You know, you think of Keane Kenny's and Malloy's points that were there. There's John Donnelly. I actually don't know for large parts of the game who was marking John Donnelly. You know what I mean? Because he got so much space and he seemed to drop off, come into that pocket lovely from centre forward, set up Kilkenny for an awful lot of attacks. We couldn't win the breaks at all on Kilkenny's book out. That was a big issue with us in the first half. In our period of dominance, whereby we were tackling on really nice scores, that was, to use Murph's phrase, it was a nice build to play. Kilkenny would lump the book out, break, up, point. Like, that was just so difficult to swallow, like, especially when we're playing that well against the Breeze, whereby Mossy Keown was getting points there into space for fun off the where we lose the primary ball, secondary ball goes to Kilkenny and it's over the bar. Whereas Galway had to work, let's say, 4 or 5 phases of really good play to get the same result. So there, if I'm looking at the Galway performance as a whole, I'll go back to what I said in the Tipperary League game. I'd say we're a slight bit loose at the back. More contact is needed. There is an element of shadow boxing too, don't get me wrong. I agree with that, but I think we've a bit to do. I think in terms of getting up to the pace of Limerick, we have a bigger gap to close than Kilkenny have.
So Murph, take up that point first of all. Adrian Mullen and Owen Cody are both better than TJ right now.
Well, I would have thought what Skell was saying there was kind of that from open play, they provide a bit more, let's say, for the players around them. Like TJ, I'm looking at TJ at the moment, and I know, like, TJ's style of play, as it's been for the last few years, like, CJ has great pace, he's physically in great condition, and I'm not going to say it for a man of his age, but like, definitely compared to his peers, he's in incredible condition for a man that's 37 this year. But TJ's game is just, it's very similar to the way Henry was, that Henry would be man-marked heavily, but still, he'd know when the man wasn't looking at him, drift away, pick up a ball, create space. Like, TJ, again, better again in the air than Henry was, but, you know, has that ability. But if you look at, you might see Adrian Mullen in corner back, picking up a ball, cruising up the field then and taking off. Adrian's style is different from TJ's. And Owen Cody then as well, if you look at what Owen Cody brings, like, he could just lock up a defender for the full day. He could start in at full forward, find himself out midfield. He's extremely athletic. So I know what he's saying there. Like, that basically the two boys at the moment, hugely influential players. And I think they spread the area of danger for Kilkenny in the forward lines, in that Owen might be in full forward. Adrian's out at midfield. The two boys are linking up and they cover that ground very well. Whereas, you know, if TJ's in full forward, he'll hold that area in full forward. He'll take the ball and you're dealing with him on a kind of one-to-one skill level. But no, I know what he's saying there at the moment. Like, when I was coming into this game, I was thinking, look, Owen Murphy, Adrian Mullen, Owen Cody out. I was thinking this is going to be a tough one. And like, you're never happy with a draw, but I was there going, you know, coming up to Salt Hill, playing a really strong Galway team, hitting over 29 points. I counted 11 different scores. You know, some of the younger lads chipping in, like Jordan Malloy coming off the bench and getting a few points. I was happy with the team selection. You know, it just looks like Derek and the lads, like, they're not really sticking with the same team. They're kind of looking at what's in front of them. What team are we playing and how can we hurt them? You know, like, Mossy Keown started out wing forward. Mossy Keown's usually a full forward, like, but he started out kind of wing forward and was out because he's good at getting on the ball. That ball lands in, like, in the second half when Kilkenny were actually, the full forward line was in and they were actually getting a few balls, kind of very similar to what Galway were doing in the first half, isolating full back line. That's not really Mossy's game. Like, Mossy isn't kind of a one-on-one sprinting with a fella for the ball. He's excellent when you land that ball in towards the full forward line, like traditional full forward, getting the breaks and really strong at taking them on. And I think they kind of identified, well, if we bring him out kind of wing forward there, establish a foothold there and start winning ball. And John Donnelly, quite similar. That physicality, I was really happy that, you know, Derek identified and the management identified that that's something that we could really utilise against Galway. Now, the other thing I will say, over the course of the game, Galway started really well and they actually played really well into the wind. Which I know a lot of people will say, oh, you know, like, you often hear Kilkenny are playing with the wind in this half, but it's really interesting in the Limerick game where Declan Hannan said that playing into the wind actually helped them in terms of it helped them get into the rhythm when he was talking in his when he's picked up the Man of the Match award for Peter Casey. I think something similar for Galway. In the first half, loads of their lads were coming looking for the ball. And so they had that option. But then they also had the option when they carried it up as far as their own 65 midfield, that because loads of lads came looking for it, the Kilkenny defenders went with them. The full back line, the full forward line were now isolated on their own. So they had that option where they actually delivered in a lot of dangerous ball into the Kilkenny full back line. But similarly enough, Kilkenny did the same in the second half. Like after about 15 to 20 minutes in the first half, Kilkenny realised what Galway were doing and adapted. Kilkenny were committing a lot of people to that middle third. Galway were carrying it up, moving the ball out of it really well. And now we're after basically negating a lot of the Kilkenny team. So Galway had a really good foothold, but it was just in the second half there. You know, when Kilkenny go in at halftime, 1-9 to 16 points up, and the second half then just kept getting those scores. And as Skettle was saying there, they didn't really get to grips with the movement of some of the Kilkenny players. I think Galway kind of did give Kilkenny a few of the scores there with a bit of their marking. But, you know, I do think Galway will come out of this a lot happier, that 2 points down, minute to go, to get two scores and are happy to come out of Pier Stadium. I think they'll be disappointed that it came to that. I think they would have been they would have been targeting this as a 3 or 4 point win. And, you know, Kenny are down one or two players. Let's go and beat them and let's go into a Leinster final with maybe a seed of doubt planted with Kilkenny. So it's a tough one. It's a tough one for both sides, because you kind of come away from going.
You're probably deflated more for that you lost a point, if you like, considering the people they're missing. But I'm deflated because you said 3 9 points. I think TJ got 6 threes. So like Kilkenny got 23 scores from play, which is we got 16 scores from play. And I think that tells its own story about what kind of space Kilkenny were allowed to. And this wasn't 23 scores where, you know, Paddy Deegan was landing three and David Blanchfield was landing three and Hugh Lawler was. I know Mikey Butler got one, I know Blanchfield got one, I get that right.
Here we go.
I know it's a nice segue, Murph, as the phrase you use yourself. I've opened the door.
It was 2-way speed scale.
To be fair, all joking aside, his point was an outstanding point.
Yeah.
Oh, it was very good. Yeah, very clever. I thought it was very smart. Like, just open the play up. Like, you know, it's all over here on the terrace side. Let's just jog up along here. And if they find me, they find me. If they don't, I'm not in too much danger. And they found him. And of course, he popped it over. And I was just going, he's the ball left to score. He likes his work as Galway, I have to say. At least it wasn't the goal this time. But yeah, if I was looking at Kilkenny, what can they build on? Jesus, like building on 23 points in play with two of the best forwards in the country to come back into it. That's not bad at all.
Yeah.
From Galway's perspective, I'm saying who has to realistically come into that team that's going to be a definite? And you're saying a definite. I'd say I would have thought Joseph Cooney was a definite in my book. But beyond that, that's it.
You'd imagine Evan Ireland would be starting the next day though.
I would have classed him pre-game as definite. I would say Conor Cooney, if he's going to be a marksman, you have to give him the freeze because he needs to be involved in the game. He has to have the same kind of responsibility in the county game as he has in the club game. But he missed a couple of ones. Now, I wasn't in the game. I didn't know the difficulty of the breeze there today. I do know it previously, so it is tricky. But when Nyland came on, he nailed some big ones. So
he did.
Sometimes I was saying, does Evan commit enough or contribute enough from play to warrant being there? And I would have question marks over that because we know what Conor Cooney can do from play potentially as a ball winner. But like you're saying, if you're in tight games and you need frees to be scored, like Jesus, are you in a position where you have to start him? You know?
Maybe. That's a decision Henry Shefflin's obviously going to have to take to work out over the next while. So, look, I don't know, Skell, you obviously, as you say, deflated is maybe not the word here. But all of the talk kind of coming into this week as well, though, was maybe this is the year that Galway need to win it. Because now you see what Limerick are doing on the Munster side of things. Very probable Munster champions.
Yeah.
There's a big incentive to be Leinster champions to not have to play them onto an All-Ireland
final. I agree. People will have different views on how you win a championship. My view is you go the path of least resistance. And that's, to be honest, that's meeting Limerick at the very last stage you meet them. And, you know, you might say, oh, that's a bit of a, you know, a fear tactic. No, it's not. It's just logical. It's logical that you avoid Limerick at the very, very last stage. No. And now we know the record is exceptional finals, but if you get that far, let's deal with it, really get that far. But what has been shown in the last couple of years is they've beaten us in 3 semi-finals in the last 4 years. You know, so it's a case whereby we need to kind of change up a small bit here. And like I was genuinely shocked when I heard, was it yourself, Murph, or Will, or something, that you were saying Kilkenny were going for 5 in a row in Leinster. And I was thinking, like, have they? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Have they? I was like, because obviously the talk is dominated by Limerick and their achievements, and rightfully so, to a degree. But I was like, Jesus, can you go for 5 in a row? And as of right now, I'm saying they're going to be hard to stop. And every year, over the last 2 years, I was saying, Jesus, we should have been in a better position to win one. Definitely last year. The year previous, beaten fair and square. But this year I'm saying, okay, now is the time. This is Henry's third year. He's well and truly grasped the situation in Galway. He knows all personnel involved. Now we have to go. We've introduced Eamon O'Shea. Johnny Glynn got back. This is the year. This is the year. So maybe today is going to be a good thing in the long run. Because, like, again, this time 12 months ago, I was a bit after the game belonged to Kenny. You know? So, yeah. And then we got a bit of traction. And we played better in the Leinster final when we got there. So, look, I often say hope or expectation. I'm in the side of expectation. I know what the lads can do. I know how good they are. So I'm expecting them to ramp it up a few notches.
Just one last one in this game, Murph. Owen Cody potentially out for 6 weeks. Probably won't matter all that much in these next three games where Kilkenny should still qualify for a Leinster final. But how much of an impact does this have now that he's going to have to come back, rehab that injury, maybe get back to match sharpness?
I think it's an ankle, a foot injury.
Yeah.
Foot or ankle or something.
Is it a hamstring? No.
I actually don't know. I know it's kind of thigh. I thought it was a thigh. I'm not sure if it's hamstring or not now.
Murphy's concussion, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's probably looking at a couple of weeks. We won't know until we probably get a dispatch on Mullen as to how bad that injury is. But the kind of feeling was, I think there was a protective boot involved with Owen Cody after the game against Antrim as well. So say if we do take it, that's a month or 6 weeks. But the way the season is condensed, it's going to be a challenge for him to get back to top speed.
Yeah,
a bit like Mullen last year with the hand injury.
It is, yeah. And like we said it last year as well, that, you know, these what would be smaller injuries like this, if you were to, let's say, before this round robin series came in, if you were to miss 6 weeks, you might miss one game, because generally we're playing once every kind of three or four weeks really in the old style of championship. But now, like, we're actually coming into the stage of championship where if a player pulls a hamstring, they're gone for the rest of the year, as in they're gone for the rest of the inter-county year. So it's really remarkable how what would have previously been just a knock or just a bit of I'm out for a few weeks. Like, I've done it myself. I was out for rolled an ankle back in 2013 and I missed one game and I came back, which is probably essentially what the equivalent of what Owen Cody has done. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see. But again, like, the rehab for these injuries is top notch as well. Like, in fairness, 6 weeks, you know, previously 6 weeks is 6 weeks, but we've seen a lot of players come back with really solid rehab in about 4 weeks. And like, Kilkenny have, I think they'll be happy having come through this game, gotten a point, going on to the rest of the games. And they will have that Wexford game, certainly. And this isn't, you know, writing off the Dublin game or anything, but they'll have that Wexford game in their crosshairs as well. But I'd be happy that, let's say, if Adrian comes back and Owen Murphy comes back, even if Owen Cody isn't right for that, well, okay, like, if he's right for, let's say, a Leinster final, fantastic, and that'd be brilliant. But I think that the team is in a good place mentally to actually take on the challenges of, you know, your Dublins and your Wexfords and see it out, to get yourself into that Leinster final first and foremost.
Yeah. We didn't get to see the other game in Leinster. I was listening to a bit of this in Casey Laurie yesterday, because again, it looked like Carlow potentially could pull off a shock. And I think there's been two decent performances from Carlow. To have it to a point against Galway in the second half of the game last week in Salt Hill, and again to have led at half time and to have pushed Dublin right to the pin of their collar. Donald Burke apparently played with a broken nose. I just saw some of the pictures afterwards. So he played on, still scored 9 points. Fergal Whiteley got the goal, goal and a point for him. Across the board, a good range of scorers for Dublin and Netwatch Cullen Park. So Conor Burke got 3 points. Danny Sutcliffe, Owen O'Donnell, Dara Gray all got 2 points each. Chris Crummy, Keno Sullivan, Sean Curry, Paul Doyle, Dara Purcell all added one. So that's a huge range of scorers. By comparison, of the 22 points, 13 points come from the stick of Marty Kavanagh, 11 of them from dead balls. John Nolan adding 3 points and Chris Keogh adding two. And then there was a few players that got 1 point each along the way. The thing about Ismurf, I guess from Carlo's perspective, it's no points on the board, but they'll have to be feeling pretty decent about the two performances they've put since they've come up from the Joe McDonagh era.
Yeah, they will. Particularly yesterday. Look, they'll be disappointed today, having come through that game. They would have felt that there was a result there for them. And at halftime, you were looking at it. I mean, we were texting away in the group going, like, they're up by 4 points here. We were only fresh off the back of Antrim taking the scalp off Wexford. So we're saying this could be a day now of upsets. And if you take the Fergal Whiteley goal out of it, like, that game is in the balance the whole way down. Like, Dublin won't be happy with that in terms of, they would have felt that you know, if they're to build on and maybe be a threat and go and win, you know, games for the rest of this round robin, that, you know, they feel that they should be putting the likes of Carlo to the sword early on. But full credit to Carlo. Look, they didn't hang around. They didn't wait to see what Dublin were doing. It was in Netwatch Cullen Park as well. So, you know, again, they brought a good performance at home. But I think they'll certainly point to a few things to say that, look, if we are to go and get a result out of these games, you know, we have to be not letting goals like that in. And we have to really, I suppose, if we're up by 4 points, kick on and not kind of maybe allow, because Dublin did get a purple patch. And every team in every game will have that little bit of a purple patch. But knowing how to kill that and maybe put the fear back into Dublin again, that's where, similar to Antrim getting the result against Wexford, that's where the secret will be for Carlo. So look, Carlo will take something from it. It's another measurable for them, as we say. And but nevertheless, it's the likes of this game that someday Carlo, they will hope they'll get a result from, and that'll be another big step up for them. So they'll feel that maybe this was a missed opportunity for them.
Yeah, in the relegation fight there, a trip to Antrim is going to be particularly big as well. So it's a big ask to stay up, and that's the pity sometimes when teams have got a yo-yo effect. But Carlo are probably happy enough how they played in the first two. Dublin will be happy enough to have gone away from home in their first two games. They've got Antrim now at Parnell Park to come. They win that, Dublin are in a strong position to finish up in third place in the group. In Munster, lads, again, we were given some classic fare on Lee's side today. In the end, it's a couple of points win for Clare. You feel like they've now, a bit like last year, shaken off a defeat in the first round. They've won in the second round. Cork would need to do a 2022 in it if they were to qualify at this point, where they lost their first two games and managed to still finish up in third place and get out of the group. It's a big, big ask from here. Wonderful finish from Patrick Horgan for the delicate goal that he scored, particularly. 2 goals and 10 points for him for Cork. In the end, Clare, I think, had that bit of resistance which was required when they were 7 points down within that game as well. Aidan McCarthy leading the scoring with 10 points. Mark Rogers adding a goal and 6. And we goals from both Shane O'Donnell and from David Fitzgerald for the banner as well. They got it done, Skell, when there were question marks about Clare after the way they faded out of the game last week. Game is in the melting pot, where Cork had been ahead for, you know, periods during the game, and going into that last 15-minute spell, Clare showed a bit of something about them today.
Well, I think both teams, in fairness, will show a bit of something about them today as well. We were quite critical of both counties last week in terms of their performances and how they finished games, but both counties came to play and came with urgency and intent. And I'm kind of pointing that more towards Cork than I am to Clare, because I was very impressed with the way Cork attacked, you know, really, really attacked the Clare backs, and the Clare backs were under ferocious pressure with like 20 frees, you know what I mean? They were at 6 and 7 at times today with the Cork forwards. But again, Clare have this kind of resilience in their forward line. If you go from like number 8 to 15, they have kind of marquee players up there who have this ability to retain the ball, make something happen. Like Duggan was having a field day on the wing. Shane O'Donnell seems to be like glue when he gets to him. Mark Rogers was on fire. He was pulling a couple of flicks and shooting from all angles. Like, really, like when you've got people of that calibre up there, your goals, you're always going to be within a shout. You know, regardless of what you can see at the back, there's going to be a situation where you're going to have the clientele to keep you within touching distance of the game. And it's a funny old game too, because the crowd, in fairness to Cork people, fair play to them, they showed up. Like when their back's against the wall for the team and the team needed support, you know, they showed up in droves. Like it looked like a sellout today. And they were loud. You could feel it off the screen, if you like.
More than 30,000 at both games, by the way.
Great.
It went in excess of 70,000 across the two grounds, which Great. Is incredible stuff. Anyway, go on.
And I think Tommy mentioned in call commentary that he wished the people behind the screen could feel the energy and the noise, probably similar to what was in QC Park last week. But on 40 minutes, like Clare are 7 down, Cork are rolling. You know, they have the rub of the green big time. And then, you know, sometimes major decisions or major, I suppose, incidents can turn the direction in which the game goes. Fast forward 8 or 9 minutes later and Clare a pint up. You know what I mean? It's funny the way the sport goes. But that's what they did. They just clawed their way back and they kept at it. And in fairness, I thought Cork, you know, if I could just trust the keepers one said, I thought Quilligan was really good today. You know, yes, okay, look at 3 goals. I get that, right? But for him, you know, you have a bit of magic from Patrick Horgan. Everyone's caught in the hop for his second goal. And the last one is kind of a bit of pandemonium. It's going to happen, right? But I thought he controlled the game really well. I mean, 3 excellent saves. So in terms of the shot count against him, Patrick Collins, I think, will be disappointed with the performance today, because a lot of his possession, you know, resulted in scores against. And, you know, there's games whereby you need to manage it out correctly. And by my count, there was a contribution there of bad passing that led to 1-5. You know what I mean? And that's like, Jesus, it's hard to stay in touch with the big teams, and specifically Munster, if we're giving them scores. Like, And Clare got into it, you know, they got into a nice lead. And you have to give credit to Cork, like, and, you know, high risk, high reward. Hogan had to go for it. If he missed it, he'd have been, you know, everyone would have been out. But for the second goal, he went for it. And, like, I think kudos to Cork, kudos to Clare. It's hard to see what way the landscape is going to finish in Munster, because the results are kind of odd at the moment, if you like. You know, I would, you know, probably still stick with my, I was going to say stick with my original three, but it's hard to see that happen anymore. Definitely stick with my original two. I think we all are kind of unanimous there. After that, I'm not sure where things are going to fall, to be honest. I'm not going to say I give up, but I don't know. I don't know what's going to be produced. You know, what kind of Watford's going to show up as, you know, next week? I don't know. Murph, over to you. Tell us.
Glad me in it.
Oh, yeah. Look, it's all around great game. But just like, I would say Clare's concession, both teams, their concession rate is too high. Shot count is too high. You know, Clare conceding the free count again. We touched this last year. Too high. You know what I mean? Ultimately, it's going to catch them. It's going to catch them. The shot count, the free count, and concession rate. Specifically goals. Like, if you consider that's between the league and the championship, that's so far, that's 17 goals. That's too many. So,
Murph, pick up that point rather than what Waterford do. So 20 frees is obviously a big problem. Like, you're a defender here. You must be, as much as we all love seeing scores and seeing goals going in, when you see 56 scores during a game, you must be ripping your hair out.
No, not when I'm watching the game. I'm not. If I was defending in the game, I'd be ripping my hair out. But like, I was looking at it from a Cork and Clare situation during the game. Like, it was funny that the situation of Cork were getting a few frees. Clare started really well, and it just seemed to be the frees that were keeping Cork in it. Patrick Horgan and Declan Dalton were both popping over frees. And I was kind of going, yeah, if Clare weren't kind of fouling here, they'd be nicely kind of tipped on. But that just kept Cork in it. And then Cork suddenly found the rhythm and got into the game. And funny enough, I was saying then, if Cork were like this against Waterford last week, they probably would have won the match. Do you know? And
They would have won the match.
Yeah, they would have. But the sentiment, when I was just, you know, listening to the commentary, and they were saying like that, you know, it's a great response from Cork from the week previous. And here they're going, but it's a response, like, you know, as in this Cork team, we've said it several times, absolutely the players are there. It shouldn't be a response. It should be just go out and hurl to your capability and don't wait to see what the other team is doing. And this Cork team is so capable of doing lots of great stuff and having really good years. And I think that's where the disappointment lies for the Cork supporters and for the Cork team, that, you know, there's lots of stuff you can point to there with Cork. Like, going in 2 points up against Clare, lots of opportunities, but then just silly decisions. I mean, Sean O'Donoghue, he can't feel that he shouldn't have been sent off. Like, you know, I mean, your goalkeeper's going out to rise the ball, you run out and you shoulder Shane O'Donnell, and you just take a silly yellow card. I don't think anybody would mind a yellow card. And don't get me wrong, Sean O'Donoghue's a great defender. He's an excellent defender. But when you do something like that and you kind of leave your team then with 14 men, it's a tough situation to be in. But Cork, in fairness, reacted. And they went back again at Clare. But it was always this reaction thing that it's kind of a... That's where the question mark lies, is why is it a reaction the whole time as opposed to go, take the game to Clare. And, you know, if you do get out in front, go and close it out if you're able. Now, Clare won't necessarily let you do that. They have the players. Shane O'Donnell, again, excellent today, so creative. Peter Duggan, probably the best game I've seen from Peter Duggan in a good few years. I'd nearly go back and say as far as, was it 2018? Yeah. Geez, he had an incredible year that year. He took one ball down in the first half there where it was a puck out, came down on top of him. Ivor Cooligan pucks it down. He took it down with the hurl, didn't even catch it, and went on to a solo run straight away. He did something similar a few minutes afterwards where he got a point on the edge of the 21 or 14. Yeah. Ball comes in. He actually controlled it back out past the Cork defender and put it over the bar. So Clare do have the players that, even if you're trying to close them out, they have the creativity there to actually go back at you. But nevertheless, I look at this Cork team and I'd say, you know, there's so much hurling there and there's so much hurling to come in off the bench that's what the disappointment is, that, you know, we backed them last week to go and beat Waterford, didn't turn up. They needed a reaction this week. They got it. But they're playing a really good Clare team who could turn them over. And now they're in a tough situation where they have two losses. One was really poor. One was a really good performance, but just wasn't enough. But it's still the same. You have two losses and that's it. And that's the tough thing to swallow. I don't even know what to think of it. Like, because, I mean, look at Clare. Savage performance against Limerick. And they look at the last 10 minutes and go, why did that happen? But the other 60 minutes, excellent. They look at today and they'll go, we're giving away a lot of frees. There's things we can point to here. But were really creative as well. And, you know, we have like Shane O'Donnell, who's really untouchable at times in at the full forward line. We're missing Tony Kelly. You know, we have David Fitzgerald, who's probably the foreign player in the country at the moment. They have lots of really good stuff. So they're in a place where they're going, well, look, we're really building. But, you know, Cork just have this thing at the moment where it's kind of a, well, what are we? What are we about? And what are we going to do, let's say, day to day? What are we going to do? That's the problem with Cork at the moment.
I'm skipping around here, Skell, slightly, but it addresses across both games. Got a few messages after the game where people wondered, are Tipperary maybe what we were expecting Waterford to be? Is there a risk that Tipperary might actually get swept across all their games?
Is there a risk? There's certainly a risk. Now, what's the probability that of that becoming reality? After today's performance, like I think if you look back on today's game against Limerick, especially in the first half, you get kind of this false sense of security that Tipperary were better than they were. It's two things. Number one is, I think Limerick didn't place their potential anywhere near it. I think they played at probably 50% of their max in the first half. It was a very stop-start game. Free dominated, you know, and there was no real, you know, fluidity to whatsoever. And so it kind of lent itself to a close encounter. Then when the game kind of became more looser, if like opened up, energy levels dropped a bit, I think we saw the real team of each. We saw the real Limerick, and we saw what's right now it seems to be the real Tipperary. And like, you go back a couple of weeks ago, right? And I know it was a bit of crack, and you know, I know I put you on the spot, Murph, but we did all unanimously agree that Tip weren't going to exit weren't going to qualify Munster. And these are the reasons, you know, these are the reasons that we would have said. We said that the forward unit can be flaky. I had questions over their defence, which they got clipped today. You know what I mean? And how they can defend and how can they build the ball off in the back. And I didn't see any energy. I didn't see much intent. You know, there was no real systematic plan. Like, even when I'm looking at a keeper doing a puck out, right, I'm watching him to see, is he reactive or is he proactive? You know what I mean? And Hogan and Fenerstrom did what he could, but it looked like he was reacting to situations. You know what I mean? It looked like there was no real systematic game plan to take down Limerick. And there was notes in the commentary whereby, you know, they seem to set themselves up to take on Limerick as opposed to having their own identity. And I agree to that. I think, like, if you go back to the history of the game and say Tipperary always had an identity, that you could identify yourself that this is Tipperary, even if they weren't wearing the jersey. But that's gone. I don't see that anymore. Do you know what I mean? And it's a tricky position to be in for that team because, you know, they have got some tough games to come. And ultimately, we're always saying, we said it last week as well, this is an evidence-based approach, and I just don't see it from Tipperary at the moment. I don't know how they're going to kind of bring this back. But look, surprises have happened in the Munster Championship before, and we could very well be talking here in 7 days' time, and they could be on the back of a victory, or, do you know what I mean? So, but again, I can't see it. Well, I can't see the quality. Like, something simple for me, where Jake Morris gets blocked down five times today. Five. Do you know what I mean? Like, and that, I'm saying that's not... Okay, you can say it's a mixture of really good defending, but me, that's just an influx of casualness, real casualness, right? No real urges or intent. Like, you just don't see Galan really getting blocked down. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't see Whelan or Cody getting blocked down. You might get once a game, of course, but five times is a pattern. And I just thought Tip were very casual today. There was no real killer instinct to just let's go for Limerick, regardless of a green jersey or where you're playing. Let's fucking go for it. I just didn't see it. So,
yeah.
And if you're not going to produce it there, that to me is like a mental situation whereby, you know, there is a frailty there. There is a frailty whereby maybe it is the Limerick thing. Maybe most teams feel that too, but there's a frailty whereby when the tide begins to turn against them, that they kind of subside a bit. They go back into their own skin and they become a set of individuals as opposed to a team. And like, it's no coincidence that when Bonner came on, immediate impact. Noel McGrath got on the ball. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Ronan Martin was still the best defender today, despite the difficulties he had in the full back line. You know? And like, you can't keep going to the well with these lads because they can only produce so much. You need more off lads like I just said, the Jake Morris, Mark Yeo, Alan Tynan, Garrett O'Connor. You just needed more off them, and ultimately didn't produce.
Yeah, I'm just going to play a bit of Liam Cahill because Cahill's reaction was interesting after the game. This is the media scrum after their defeat against Limerick, and what Liam Cahill had to say about Tip's performance.
We have 6 days now to turn it around, turn the page, and try and get our heads around going to a very difficult assignment in Welsh Park in 6 days' time.
What aspects disappointed you the most?
Oh, Shane, where do I start? Like, you know, again, our energy levels, I just can't understand it. You know, we just seem to be that little bit off the pace, just looking in at a team that really are just kind of, you know, hurling in hope, like, and that's an awful place to be when you're coming into the lines then here to the All-Ireland champions into their backyard. You need to be absolutely convinced that you're going to take that ball, whether it be in a ruck or whether it's out of the air or whether you're taking on your man. You just have to be so sure what you're about. And you know, look, again, I say it, like, these boys are training fierce well, but I don't know what's the case with them coming to the match day feed. It just doesn't seem to be happening for them. But look, we'll stay with them. We'll stay sticking with them. There are a lot of, you know, newer guys in there today again, and it's, you know, I suppose in hindsight, like, we have to put real perspective on this. You know, we made massive gains very quickly last year, got a quick bounce, but I think it's really coming to fruition now to everybody that this thing is going to take a little bit of time until this team totally transitions into I suppose, a new established side, and there's a good bit of lessons to be learned for everybody involved to make that happen.
Now, Murph, I don't mean for a moment to make that sound as if Liam Cahill has just said this isn't going to turn around and write off the year or whatever, but that sounds very much like this is a longer-term plan than I even thought it was going to be.
Yeah, it does, yeah. Look, I mean, and I wouldn't have looked at it that way. I would have looked at, okay, it was a tough day against Limerick, and there's definitely things you can point at there that you wouldn't be happy about. I mean, if you look at, they didn't score between the 25th and 35th minute, which isn't good. If you have intentions to go and really have a tilt at Limerick, you can't be doing that. And up until that, they had 6 points. Now, they're playing into a wind, but, you know, when Jason Ford got the last free there at the first half, up until that, did 6 points in the first half, which just isn't good enough. Mm-hmm. But it's I wasn't expecting to hear that either from Liam Cahill at the same time. Like, I was kind of going, it's the first game. And, you know, it was, I suppose you could look at it as an improvement from what we saw in the league semi-final, in that there were a bit more intensity about them in the first half, but nevertheless, like, they did drift. There's no point in saying that until they did drift 5 points down, and that at halftime, and that only was exacerbated in the second half. But it, you know, it is quite stark when you hear that from Liam Cahill to say that. You know, I suppose you could have very easily come out there and just said, you know, tough day at the office and so on, and move on to the next game. But it does sound like that he's indicating that there's a much longer plan here, and that it might necessarily work out for them this year, which, even though, as Cahill was saying earlier, we didn't put them in the top three to come out of Munster. But nevertheless, similar to saying Wexford could go and turn over Galway at the weekend, you're still going that, well, Tipperary are still Tipperary. They're still capable of performing and still capable of turning over teams. But Liam Cahill is maybe pointing to something a little bit more there, that, look, they're performing when they're down in Dr. Morris, but, you know, when it comes to a match, that we're just not seeing it. So it sounds there as if he has a few question marks over why that is. And maybe at the moment, maybe doesn't have necessarily the answers, in that he's saying that it's going to take time for a few of these lads to mature and come to the pitch of the game and so on. And I think, like, for Tipperary fans, that's not maybe what you want to hear at the moment. Maybe you're kind of, you know, I think a lot of Tipperary fans might be going home today going, okay, we'll park that one. It's Limerick. We maybe weren't expecting a result, but there's other games to come here, and let's go and get a few results, and why not go and just hurl each game as it comes, maybe get the victories. But that doesn't really match up with what Liam Cahill is saying there.
Yeah, well, Skell, it's a consistent story with Limerick here. They're 1 point below the average. Usually they hit 30 scores. This case, 227. Mm-hmm. I suppose if you convert their goals, it goes over the 30 points. But 29 scores that were scored by them. Again, they beat Tipperary in the second half of a game, which has been a consistent pattern. And they're unbeaten against Tipperary in the last six. What did you make of Limerick's performance?
I thought they were, for large portions of the game, I said they were really effective. I think the game kind of died as a contest for the last 25 minutes, if I'm honest. Mm. I didn't think there was much competition involved in it. But I think it felt like Tipperary kind of accepted their fate, which is very bad. And like the first stat I ever look at, now I know my mind is quite analytical when it comes to looking at games after, right? But the first stat I always look at is the turnover stat. So like, who, that kind of gives you kind of a, it gives you a broad picture of what each team is offering. And the turnover stat was 42-24, which is, in terms of senior inter-county hurling, is an enormous gap. So normally what you have is you might have a gap of anything between, you know, 2 and 5, which is generally what the case is, right? But when you have a gap of 18, that's absolutely enormous. And that kind of tells its own story. Tipperary just couldn't get hands on Limerick. And there was methods with it. They tried at times, but just ultimately Limerick ran through them. And their style of play, when you get Limerick building out from the back, and even Declan Hannan mentioned in the post-game interview, where they're allowed to play fluid and they're allowed to play a running game, and they've, like, lads trudging forward, they're an impossible animal to stop. And like that's what you have to stop. And I think someone said it in the commentary in RT as well, that you have to stop it at source. That's my full agreement. That's why I'm always saying you have to go 15 on 15 against Limerick. And look, what happens, happens. You know, what'll be will be. But if you go, let's say, you know, 14 versus 15. If that makes sense, if you go, let's say, with a seventh back or a third midfielder up against, and you leave five forwards take on six backs against Limerick, you're bet. You're bet. Yeah. That's it. If you allow them to come out and build, they're so efficient in the way they use the ball, coming out from numbers 2 to 7, that they're going to go right through you. And that's it. So you have to kind of stop at its source and put pressure at the very, very top and just tip rate it and do it. Like, and if you're, and I'm really disappointed with the full forward. Like, I thought they'd tackle better and tackle harder and put more pressure, but they just didn't, you know. And so what happened is that Limerick got to play the game that they wanted to play. They went on the front foot after like minute 35. They played the system they wanted to adopt and just Tipperary didn't have the answers. And once you allow Limerick to get into their system and get into their groove, you know, in the front of their home crowd, you know, that's it. Forget about it. And the team is the same. Let's like go back now. We can go back to all these bloody games that they've played Tipperary. You can go back to last year's league semi-final. You can go back to the Munster Championship last year for periods, right? Came out of draw. You can go back to the Munster final is the big one that sticks out in Páirc Uí years ago, a couple of years ago. Is that when Tipperary have loads of energy to start, you know, pumped up, but then it's like, oh shit, we can't stop this animal. And then it just, the result becomes inevitable. And Limerick then, once they get flown in front of the home crowd, that's it, forget about it. And it's just, well, it was just tarnished by Peter Casey's injury, but ultimately it was a sound day for Limerick.
Yeah, I mean, okay, before I ask you about Peter Casey's injury, Murph, the most deadly thing in hurling right now is a free that gets mishit and lands a bit short from Dermot Burns. That's 2 weeks in a row now, you know, that carried to the net the first week. And this time around, it was Galan who profited with the goal.
Yeah, and like, I mean, the strike to actually score the goal, that was a great strike because he was outside the 21. It was an absolute bullet. But that was probably the real bolt in the whole game. Like, this was a game that never really got going, if we're being honest about it. And that was the one bit of skill that I suppose shone through the whole thing, that a mishit ball lands in and Galan just, you know, great bit of skill there. But other than that, look, when you look through the rest of the game, like Declan Hannan said it after the game, Limerick by no means were superb in this game. In the first half, their play was quite disjointed. I thought Tipperary played into their hands in that. I was comparing and contrasting to Kilkenny and Galway, where Galway in the first half carried the ball really well up to the 65 midfield and then hit their forwards when they looked up. But Tipperary weren't looking up and they kept striking the ball to the edge of the D. And it's not that Tipperary were playing or Limerick were playing an extra man back. There was just always a man there. And you could nearly hear the groan from the Tipperary supporters when that ball had drifted in. And I counted about five of them that was struck in. And you were just kind of going, it's like you're banging a head against a wall there, where you're like, if you carry the ball a little bit of the way up the way and you carry it to your centre back position, maybe carry it a bit of the way further or at least hit the corners with that ball. Because you know a Barry Nash or Dan Morrissey or someone is going to be standing there waiting for the ball. So there was lots of frustrating parts for the Tipperary supporters. In the second half then, Limerick just kicked on. Limerick, like Declan Hannan was saying, when they're playing against the wind, they actually found their flow that wasn't there in the first half. A few wides in the first half, Dermot Burns, the radar was off a small bit from freeze. They go in having 12 points with the wind and they score 2-15 against the wind. You know, so that really indicates to you that they found their flow in the second half. And you know, when players started coming looking for the ball and were forced to carry the ball up the field, that's where Limerick really flourished. They carried the ball into those good scoring positions. And even Tom Morrissey grew into the game then as well as they were carrying the ball up into those positions. So, look, this game just never got going. I don't think Tipperary will take a whole lot from it. I don't think Limerick will either. The only thing Limerick will take from it is that they'll be saying they're not happy with where they are at the moment. And that's a dangerous thing for other teams because, like, they maybe are, I can't even call it vulnerable at the moment, but they're not happy with how they're playing, which means they're not playing to the max of their ability. But they're going to try and get there and they're going to do their best to go. And you'll believe that they will get there at some stage. And every other team in the meantime has to get their act together to go and have a pop at them. If they say they're not at their best, we may take their word for it and try and go and beat them. But all the while, they're a moving target. They're going to keep improving. So I think that's where Limerick will be focusing on for the next while.
Yeah, so John Kiley's comments after the game, Peter Casey scored that goal in the 55th minute, goes down injured. Looked like it was a problem for his ankle. And John Kiley said after the game, Peter Casey will get, quote, the best of care after what looks like a serious injury. He was stretchered off the pitch. He said, quote, apart from winning or losing or anything like that, No one wants to see a player get injured in the field of play. He said Peter has been there before with a serious injury in Croke Park in the All-Ireland final. Had to make that recovery before. I don't know yet the extent of the injury, but it feels like it's significant. No two ways about that. We're thinking of him and we'll make sure he gets the best of care and that he's looked after. We'll give him every chance to make a comeback at some point in the future, but it is very disappointing, end quote. So obviously, look, Scott, we have to wait and see how bad it is, but look, on the field and on the telly, it looked really bad.
It is. You know, I don't want to speak about it too much because it's talk about a man's misfortune, but like when you see a picture paints a thousand words, lads, and that's all you need to see. And even from the reaction from the person, the people around him, that's a lot. But like, I think I mean this now in terms of health terms, he's in a great position with the people he has around him. So like, if you got such good, genuine, decent GA people, like Kylie comes across that way. We all know what JP's like for GA players. So I have confidence that he'll get back to, please God, touch wood, he'll get back to his, I'd say, current self with the form that he was in today.
Yeah, no, hopefully. I mean, look, it's going to be a blow, Murph. It's not like they don't have options that they can bring around, but still, we saw what Casey could do in the All-Ireland final last year. We saw his goal today. Like, he still brings a little bit something different to that forward line, which is going to be missed while he's out.
It will, yeah. And when you add it into his cruciate injury there a few years ago in the All-Ireland final, like, it's just, like, it's kind of, it's so unfortunate that two big injuries, like if a player is unlucky, they'll get one big injury in their career, and other players get more than that. And we've seen that in numerous examples of players who've been very unfortunate. But, you know, Peter Casey comes back into form, and he's one of the forwards who doesn't get as much of the limelight. Not that he wants it, I'd say, but, you know, other players get a lot more credit. But, and I've said this several times, marked him in 2019 in the semi-final, and a player that we would have enormously respected in our dressing room in terms of what he brings to that forward line. Whereas you might have lads who'll finish, you know, hang the ball in top corner and all these different things, big physical players. Peter Casey gets through an enormous amount of work. Like, he's kind of, I suppose, he's like when you talk about your Jamie Barrons, this cover serious ground. A lot of the work is so selfless. Like, Graham Mulcahy would have been very similar to that now in terms of when you're in the full forward line, but you go chasing back out the field to get little hook, turn over the ball. The other team's on the attack. You know, Gillan might finish it. Seamus Flanagan might finish it. But in essence, it was Peter Casey's work that done it. And like you said, All-Ireland final, then you see what he's capable of. He's an extremely talented finisher. So all those things put together, you know, it's just disappointing for a fella to have another injury now while Limerick are riding the crest of this wave at the moment and going for a five in a row. That, look, Sean Finn was out for one of the All-Irelands. Keane Lynch was out for one of the All-Irelands. There's a fair chance these lads will go to an All-Ireland, if not win an All-Ireland. And, like, you know, he's not going to be part of that. He'll be there in the background. So it's just all that. It'll be disappointing. It's something he'll have to wrap his head around over the next few days. But look, you see it, the outpouring there on social media. It can be a poor place at times, social media, but you see the outpour across the GA community to him that, you know, everybody wishes him well in his recovery.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we'd echo that as well. So the games coming up in Munster, they're obviously a little bit staggered at the moment. So you've got this coming Saturday. We'll talk about this on the bonus pod for Off The Ball members. Waterford against Tip at Welsh Park, which Liam Cahill said is a quick turnaround, 6 days for Tipperary, where really their chance of qualification are on the line going into that game. Is a huge match to decide who's going to qualify in Munster. And then you've got Cork against Limerick, which is coming up at Páirc Uí Chaoimh on the 11th of May, with no wiggle room left whatsoever for Cork at this stage. They'll have to clean out the points if they're going to qualify. And Limerick would have a foot and a half into the Munster final if they were to win that game on Lee's side on Saturday, 2 weeks. So all that to look forward to. Just before we finish, lads, the numbers have been totted up. I know that Murph was doing these as well. Here we are in fantasy. Good week for Paul Murphy. 2-3-4 brings him on to 4-7-6. Same score as me. But James Scale, after that first week where things went a bit wrong with your late lack of changes, they've cost you a little bit. You're on 3-9-9. And you're in the bottom half of the listeners' league as well. I hate to break it to you.
Not to beat around the bush here, but I am screwed. That is absolute reality. Even my decisions today, like I pressed update team, right? Yep. When I did my transfers, and yeah. I said, "What are you after doing, you idiot? You idiot!" I put in two lads. I was like, "You fucking idiot! What are you after doing? Putting in the two lads, like, you know?" And I'm just saying, oh, I just give up. I left in Callum Lyons, not playing today.
Yeah, you know, that wasn't clever.
Well, I think you were going to end up probably anyway leaving in one player at least that probably wasn't going to start today. I think, like, it depends on what way you went with your Oh no, maybe he didn't. You know, he wouldn't have to. He wouldn't have to, I suppose. You're right. Yeah. I left in Callum Lyons as well, but I felt I just had to move other players around.
Yeah, like I had to check out obviously Mullen and Cody for obvious reasons. They were kind of injury laden, and I was saying, who will I put in now? And I put in two tip forwards. And I was saying, after I put in one, I said, why did I do that? And now it cost me lads, so I'm afraid to say I'm out of the race, but. Because, Will, you seem to have escaped this forfeit, actually.
Yeah, I didn't get involved in this whatsoever. So, I mean, both of you were talking about, well, one of you's going to have to tattoo the other. I kind of went, I'm going to sit
back here. I never said that. Scale actually said this. This is the thing.
Yeah,
but that's, you have to understand, that's when I was in a position of dominance in the league. Right now, I'm not in a position of dominance. So
where they press this enormous reset button when it comes to championships.
Me no speaking English. I don't remember this.
Well, look, there's people at the top of our fantasy league who are on about 700 points at this stage. So
that's ridiculous, though. That's outright ridiculous.
Oh, it's ridiculous. There's some scores there, and I'm just going, like, these lads must have a crystal ball as to who's performing well. It's outstanding.
Yeah, so Nicky Murphy, Noah's star, is at the top at the moment. 297 this week. Didn't quite break the 300. 629 overall, which is insane. Like, Jesus, that's up towards the top of it. Our top celebrity is the former Galway Camogie manager, Cathal Murray. Again, he's gone fairly well. Sarsfield's club in Galway. 279, 551 overall. Like, we have a lot of people in our league who've gone over 500 points, which is just ridiculous scoring.
Yeah.
Like, I was happy enough. I was 40th overall after week one. Didn't have a bad week, you know. What was that, 215? You're thinking, that's pretty decent. 200 points is a good score on a game week in fantasy. And there's people out here who've just gone flying. I'm assuming these are people who had Patrick Corgan captained, who had Lee Chin captained. Had to be something like that to get like a near 300 week, but there you go. If you want to take part, you can still do so. Check out any of our social medias or check out Fantasy. You'll see, I think they were tweeting out our code a little bit earlier on as well. You can still join the league at this stage, so why not join along? But you're going up against some of the proper boffins across the country with the scores we're seeing so far. That is it for us for this week, lads. The Hurling Pod's been brought to you by Borgosh Energy. They are the proud sponsors of the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship. We will be back with a members pod on Tuesday morning. We're going to preview the games which are coming up this weekend. It's a slightly smaller scale. We'll also have a chat because I was at the Joe McDonagh Cup game between Offaly and Westmeath, which Offaly won at the weekend. We can dig into these games in a bit more detail because now they're on Clubber as well. All the games shown at the weekend. So my becrying of a lack of games being on recently, I believe, I haven't seen the Sunday game yet, I'll have to watch it tomorrow, that Offaly Westmeath was also on there because there was a camera going to O'Connor Park to film that one. Offaly won 223 to 120. Kerry and Laois this weekend looks big because both teams have won their opening two fixtures. Laois put up a mammoth score against Meath. I think there's a definite feeling that Meath are going to be struggling to avoid the drop into the Christy Ring, but Laois 729, Meath 116. And then Kerry beat Down this afternoon in Tralee, 26 points to 212. So Laois go to Kerry next Saturday afternoon, which is a top-of-the-table clash, both teams on 4 points. You would think the winner is in complete pole position to qualify for the final at that stage. Offaly go away to Meath, and Westmeath go to Down. And Westmeath, who hurled in Division 1 the league this year and were relegated from the Leinster Senior Championship last year, now have to win every game if they're to have a chance of going to Croke Park. So that's where the Joe McDonagh Cup is at. We'll talk about that in a bit more detail on the members pod as well. But for now, James Gell, thanks a million.
Thanks, folks. See you.
And Paul Murphy, thanking you.
Sound, lads.
OTB's The Hurling Pod.
With Bord Gáis Energy. Proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.